Welcome to the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution. Listen to interviews with the most influential people in the insurance industry. Learn the most important strategies, tactics, trends, and challenges facing today's independent insurance agents and brokers. New episodes every Wednesday. Visit agencyrevolution.com and click media to explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers. Subscribe today and get updates delivered right to your inbox. And now, without further delay, the Connected Insurance Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Michael Janz, co-founder of Agency Revolution, and I want to welcome you to this episode of the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution, creators of Attract, a powerful marketing suite that enables you to spend less time doing marketing and more time growing your business. Attract gives you the technology and the content you need to find your ideal prospect and turn them into your best customer. If you haven't seen it, or if you haven't seen it lately, now's the time. Visit agencyrevolution.com and request a demo of this software today. I have so many notes from my conversation with my guest, Chris Barand. I almost don't know where to start. This is one of those conversations that when I got done, I went, wow, there's a lot there, and I'm pretty sure you're going to find the exact same thing. I'm going to start with his resume and then just move quickly on to the conversation itself. Chris, he's the president and owner of Barand Associates, a management consulting firm specializing in property and casualty. He's recognized as a leading consultant for agency valuations, producer compensation plans, E&O carrier-approved E&O procedure reviews. He's also, he provides the acclaimed contingency contract analysis, servicing as the largest database and knowledge of contingency contracts in the insurance industry. He established Barand & Associates in 1992. Since then, he's been a featured speaker across the continent more than 350 times. His articles have been published more than 400 times. He writes a monthly column for the Insurance Journal. He's published a book. Some people might say it's the book on E&O tips. He's co-authored a book on agency perpetuation. And he's been a monthly agency management columnist for 20 years for various publications. You've probably seen him in Rough Notes, National Underwriter, and so on and so on and so forth. Again, I think there is, how do I say it? There's more meat here than at a Texas steakhouse. Chris has a unique perspective on the forces and trends that are affecting the retail agency today and that are affecting the industry. And we roll this out a little bit to take a look at what the future looks like and what agency principals really must do now. Not only to prepare for that future, but really what they have to do now to thrive today. So without further ado, it really is a great privilege of mine to be able to introduce to you, if you haven't met him before, my friend, Chris Barand. Chris Barand, thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Doing well, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm excited about it. And because I know some of the things that I want to pick your brain on, I'm excited about this conversation. First, for perhaps the few listeners who don't know who you are, if you can give us a little thumbnail on Chris Barand.
I've been in the insurance industry now for most of my life, 32 years, going on 32 years. And I've been doing consulting for insurance agencies and carriers for the better part of that for about 25 years now.
Okay. Hey, you know, interestingly, full disclosure, this is not our first interview. Sometime between 20 and 25 years ago, I interviewed you for what was then the Tape of the Month Club for insurance agents.
Jack Burks?
Yeah, well, no, this was mine. This was, you know, Jack had his and George had his and Michael had his, right? Yeah, it's been a while since people have been asking for that. Where's that cassette tape interview you did with Chris? So then we did move on to CD of the month, and now here we are every week, live podcast. So the focus of your of your consulting, your advisory practice is mostly, once again?
Yeah, most of our work is in the form of, on a tactical level, agency valuation and E&O work. We do a lot of work with regards to carrier relationship management. And then, as you'll see, probably based on the questions you ask me, the last 3 or 4 years has really taken off for speaking to the future. Someone called me a futurist the other day. I thought that was kind of interesting, relative to the insurance industry. So I've been doing a lot of presentations around the United States on that subject.
Okay. Well, that's a great jumping off point. Because largely, we talk a lot about the future here because we think it's really, really interesting in the insurance industry. And you clearly have some perspective there. So I have questions. I have a pocket full of questions that I'm going to throw at you. But let's talk a little bit about this future. Do you want to talk about 1 year, 3 years, 5 years? Where do you want to start?
Yeah, we're probably, you know, looking at somewhere at, give or take, 5 years out.
Okay. So, you know, clearly, you perceive that there might be some distinctions, some differences between the future that we're living in and the world that we're living in right now as retail insurance agents. What do you think is going on?
Well, it's your timing is pretty good because right now, today, I am writing my annual white paper on the state of the insurance industry.
Uh-huh.
And it's a pretty extensive report every year. It's very detailed. And
let me just pause you for a moment. If people want to get it, how do they get it and when can they get it?
It will probably be available towards the end of March, and they can get it off my website, www.buran-associates.com.
Okay, got it. We will definitely circle back to how people can contact you at the end of our conversation. So, can you give us a sneak preview of some of your insights about the future of the insurance industry or the state of the insurance industry?
Sure. So the trends have already developed, and it's going to be hard to see that those trends are ever reversed. And I think one of the most telling trends is how safe the insured world has become. And that's something that I find most people don't realize, that we watch TV news and, you know, we think that things are getting worse and more dangerous and all of that. But one of the pieces of data I track is how many claims are reported. Just how many claims do people have every year? And the number of claims that are incurred annually have been decreasing on an absolute basis for 10 years.
Uh-huh.
And if you add in for GDP, increases in population, increases in vehicles, increases in exposures, the number of claims being filed has decreased materially in the last 10 years.
How do you measure that? Like materially, give me a number.
Say 2005, there were 54 million claims.
Okay.
And in 2016, there were 48 million claims.
Got it. Kind of the next obvious question is severity. So as the number of claims go down or has gone down, has the cost of some of those claims, are they the same or higher? Because there are a lot of arguments for some of them being higher.
Some are higher, but severity has to go up when frequency goes down.
Uh-huh.
It's just a natural balance to some degree. But overall, losses just aren't really keeping up the way that they used to keep up. The insurance industry, for a variety of reasons, good, bad, and different, our premiums have grown faster than the economy has grown over the last 15, 20 years. One reason for that is that the actuaries didn't expect that the world would become so much safer so quickly. And so they made an honest mistake of overcharging.
Right.
And so that's one of the reasons for this.
So overall, what has been the impact of that on the profitability of the industry?
The industry has become so much more profitable in the last 10, 15 years than ever before, by far, bar none.
And now, as the industry has become profitable, how much of that has translated to the retail sector?
It's not translating to the retail sector.
Because I know that before this conversation, I'm going to circle back to something you said in a previous conversation with me, which is that we can also anticipate that commissions are going to go down. So,
yeah.
So tie all that together. Claims are going down and losses are going down and profits are going up. But gosh, on the distribution side, you're saying, oh, commissions are going to go down and profitability is not going up. So tie all this together. Help us understand,
sure.
You know, I mean, it's a serious issue. So tell
it's us. Very
Yeah, tell us what you think is happening here.
Right. So one of the reasons commissions are going to go down is because the carriers have studied this, Price Waterhouse, Accenture, Deloitte, all of these different big consulting firms have studied it.
Right.
And their conclusions are all pretty much the same, that because the world is becoming a safer place, because there's this sharing economy developing, that the exposures are going to decrease dramatically over the next, within the next 5 years.
Uh-huh. Okay.
The Accenture study suggests that the premiums at the carrier level will decrease by 20%, which is roughly $100 billion. And the,
okay.
That's a phenomenal amount of money. Now, some of that's going to be made up. How much, we don't know. No one really knows.
Made up by what, do you think? What do they miss?
They'll be made up maybe by more sales of cyber.
Yeah.
Maybe there will be some what they call leakage capture that will help some. But there's going to be a lot of loss based on all of these different studies. And the carriers are looking at it, and they're thinking two things, and pretty much two things only. Number one is, how do we cut expenses ahead of this loss of premium? And number two, how do we find distributors, not just agents, but distributors that know how to generate organic growth?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so item number one, cut expenses. So do you think, I guess I'm looking for your professional opinion on this. I mean, clearly, one response is, well, we have to cut, you know, commissions, right? Let's cut costs at the distribution, you know, part of the value chain. Do you think that's well conceived, or do you think that's an error?
It's pretty well conceived, because they're going to use technology to replace agencies in two critical areas. Technology is pretty close to there on a widespread basis. It's already there in very narrow areas. And that is number one, carriers are not going to need agents to complete applications. It's going to be done by technology, and therefore they do not.
When do you feel comfortable about that?
Oh, the technology's already there. Yeah. You're already seeing it. It's already being used. Chubb made an announcement not 2 months ago?
That.
Let's see here. I'll read it to you. Their announcement, to some extent or another, in summary, said that they will be using one question and one question only for their applications. They'll be online, and that's it.
I have to ask, can you explain the technology that makes
sure,
that
it's a data
possible.
Scraping technology.
It's so, what?
Data scraping. So once you have, once you have the key piece of information and permission, someone goes out and does a data scrape of the pertinent information, it pre-fills, and it's tied into your predictive modeling. The evidence is pretty strong, I'd argue, that they can underwrite more effectively with data scraping
Than they can with the answers that are provided by the consumer?
Than the answers provided by the consumer or the agent.
Or the agent.
Yep.
Okay. Wow.
Yep.
That's pretty remarkable. So you said there are two
The other one goes hand in hand. So that's on the commission side, right? On the profit sharing side is where the other cut will probably occur, because upfront underwriting already works well enough in many lines, many segments, that they don't need agents upfront underwriting. Now, the companies haven't come out and said it so explicitly, but if you think about it this way, the company's paying an underwriter to underwrite, company is paying a predictive modeling software company to upfront underwrite, and right now they're paying an agency to upfront underwrite. Mm-hmm. Who in their right mind pays three entities to do one job?
Right. Okay.
So we also know that upfront underwriting, the way that the predictive modeling models have been built, can create a more exact pricing model that affects growth and profits and underwriting all simultaneously. And that's really an issue that I believe that the National Association of Insurance Commissioners is studying in depth, because there's an aspect of that that may be a societal issue because of the power of the predictive modeling software. And so there's a question as to how far does the NAIC actually allow this whole aspect to go. They can get really, really precise in some of their pricing these models. And the question really goes a little bit further to the heart of the industry as a whole. The pricing now includes the predictive model modeling now includes non-actuarial data points. And historically, we've always been an industry of large numbers.
Right.
Big numbers.
Right.
Which means it's all been actuarially based pricing. It no longer is 100% actuarially based pricing.
What is non-actuarial based pricing?
It's an elasticity based pricing. So how much will the market pay without regards to what the actuary's state is required? So that's why you see higher or lower prices for new business and jacked up rates at renewal, because we need to have a suck-in price at the low for new.
Uh-huh.
Jack it up at renewal, hope enough sticks. Some of it will leave, but if the overall gain is high enough, it's worth it. And so it's already not actuarially based, not purely.
Uh-huh.
We already know that.
Okay. So we're talking about this future that is safer, that has clearly some pressures at the carrier level. There'll be, as you predicted, potentially a fairly significant loss in premium. Hence, we've got a future with some reduced commissions. But you're also saying reduced work, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So
from that, what do you think is the strategic implication for the agency principal who's trying to figure out how to thrive in the future?
Well, we got to embrace technology instead of pushing back on technology. There's some neat technology that's coming out within the next 12 months, maybe 24, that will significantly reduce agency workloads to offset some of the commission cuts, profit sharing cuts.
Can you talk a little bit about what you see there? What kind of technologies can help do that?
Yeah, I'm really limited as to what I can exactly say.
I understand that.
Yeah. So let's just say that on the processing side, technology is being developed very quickly to eliminate a lot of the processing and to improve the quality of the processing, but it eliminates the human in the process in many cases.
Got it.
Now, the catch to that, Michael, is that in seeing how some agency owners react and a lot of personnel in agencies react, they've said, well, if you eliminate all of the, what I would call personally, on just my personal value system, the drudgery part of processing.
Yes.
The reaction has been, well, that's what I do. well, I don't know what to do if I'm not doing all that drudge work. But
who says who says that? Who responds?
I've heard agency owners say that.
Okay.
Producers say that.
That's, okay, so that's what we're all about. Okay. All right. Processing
yeah, that's their
drudge.
Identity. Yeah.
Okay.
That's their identity.
So what's the response there?
How
do you respond to someone?
The technology's going to take it over.
Okay. That's the direction that the world is moving. Okay. So there's kind of a series of good news, bad news. So on one hand, you know, bad news, commissions are being reduced. On the other hand, good news, there's some less work associated with it. But bad news, nobody wants to be smaller, right?
Right.
You know, good news, we'll be able to embrace technologies that'll make it easier. But still, you know, if in fact there's such a significant reduction in premium, $100 billion, right? Then as in it, there's a shrinkage in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
So, the agency principal who's committed to organic growth wants to continue to ideally scale their agency. One of your pieces of advice is to embrace technology. What else do you think they need to do?
Yeah, embrace that technology. If necessary, you may end up having to lay off some people, but reinvest the difference, because the technology is going to cost less than the people.
Right.
Reinvest the difference in high-quality organic growth, whether that's a marketing program or if that's it with high-quality producers. But that takes me to the next point, and that is that...
By the way, I want to hear your next point, but I don't want to skip over that one. That's really important. Invest in growth, right? So, let me ask you a question. I promise I'll swing back to your swing back to your point. But given that, so let's say that some agencies really do step up. So now, let's say whenever, 3 years from now, 5 years from now, they're running a more efficient operation. The technology is more efficient, and they want to grow. So they invest in marketing. So they get more clients in the door, and they probably invest sufficiently to help keep those clients in the family. Do you think then that means that there is further consolidation at the agency level? In other words, the good will kind of rise to the top, and there'll be some thinning of the herd?
Gosh, that's a great question. You know, it's a weird deal. On paper, there should have been a massive amount of consolidation already with all the acquisitions and what have you, but based on the Big Eyes numbers, the number of agencies that exist is holding relatively stable. So we know that we have a whole lot, thousands of new agencies being created.
There are mechanisms. I've had guests on this show who have kind of shared some of the mechanisms that they're responsible for generating these startup agencies, these switches from the direct or captive channel to our channel. So we do seem to be holding pretty steady in terms of the number of agencies, but I don't believe that we're holding steady in terms of kind of the distribution of premium written among agencies. So the larger agencies are getting larger, right? And we have
the larger agencies are getting larger almost exclusively because of acquisitions.
Okay. They're not enough good marketers. I recognize that. There's not enough organic growth.
Right. They're budgeting by and large, especially if you take out healthcare premium increases.
Yeah.
A lot of them budget for 0% organic growth.
Okay.
So, very minimal.
Yeah. All right. So is your sense that the thriving agent in the future, they're running a very efficient shop and they have some strategic commitment to organic growth?
They have to have a strategic commitment to organic growth, and they're going to have some extra dollars, I would think, to invest there. And they're going to be, you know, the one that everybody wants because they're the one of the few that can really fill that gap.
They're the ones the carriers want.
They're the ones that carriers want. They're going to be the ones that acquirers
want.
They're
going
to be the ones everyone wants.
Right. You do valuation, right? The difference between an agency that, you know, whatever, let's say the $3 million agency that's flat and the $3 million agency that has a consistent record for, let's say, the last 4 or 5 years of, you know, whatever, a nice 15 or 20% organic growth rate. The difference in valuation is significant, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
So, now you had indicated that at least for a period, agencies, if they do achieve some efficiencies through technology, they might have some additional dollars that they can invest in their growth. But at some point, I think you're anticipating further pressure on commissions.
Right. There will be. For a lot of reasons, that as you know, for a variety of reasons, the company's going to continue to push, and so we're going to see a shift in the modeling of what an agency actually is.
Right,
and we're getting there already.
Okay,
and there's another factor that's coming in that's pushing the same exact direction, but it's coming at it from another angle, and that's E&O.
Oh, okay. Talk about that.
So on the E&O side, we've always had a varying degree. It's always been a sliding scale based on statutory law and case law relative to the standard of care to which an independent agent is held. A lot of independent agents aren't taught, don't know that independent agencies in most locations are held to a different standard of care than carriers or captive agents. Generally, they're held to a higher standard of care.
Okay.
Now, most of the time, most of the places, for good reasons and for bad, the traditional independent agency has been kind of in the middle ground. They like to show that they're really, really good, but maybe they treat certain clients better than other clients. And maybe they have they're not quite as consistent in their processes and adherence to standards of care.
Mm-hmm.
And it's worked out pretty, you know, decently well. If you look at the big picture, if anyone listening's ever been sued, you know, for this, you know that it is scary as all get out and one of the worst things that ever happened. But because of changes in technology, again, the same exact technologies, in fact, that is going to increase efficiencies in well-run agencies.
Right.
Is also increasing efficiencies for plaintiff attorneys' ability to do discovery on independent insurance agents for E&O claims.
Okay.
So they're going to be able to. The technology already exists. I've already seen it. I've already seen it demoed, and they can go into an independent insurance agency with this technology, and they can go through tens of thousands of documents and emails and files at a cost savings to them estimated to be as much as 75% less than it was historically.
Wow. Okay.
So they're going to be able to find very specific files very quickly that don't meet the required standard of care. Whereas before, the attorneys didn't want to take on the cases because it was too expensive.
Too much work, too much manual labor.
Way
too much risk.
Manual labor.
Oh, goodness.
And, I mean, I've been an expert witness, and I've been called in to do the discovery to, like, a warehouse full of paper, and that takes weeks to get through and a ton of money. To be able to put this into a scanner and have it all taken care of immediately or just, attach onto the server and do it, wow. So the standard of care and adherence to the standard of care is going to be a lot greater, and that's going to divide agencies into true professionals and peddlers, people that really don't provide advice, just make a sale, go on, don't really do much for the client other than look at markets and price. And so that coincides with a change in the cost model as far as the carriers are going. They're going to cut commissions. And they're still going to need the people that just peddle insurance at whatever the price is and shop price. But it's going to be a very different model than those agents that are true professionals. The agents that are truly professionals giving high-quality advice to clients, I feel very strongly that they are going to go to a fee model instead of a commission model.
Really?
For that high-quality advice they're going to be providing.
So I just want to step back on that for a second.
Yeah.
So number one, E&O.
Mm-hmm.
The first insurance I ever sold. So based on what you said, it would seem that E&O premiums are going to spike.
Very likely.
Okay. So we can see costs go up on E&O. And then the second thing that comes to mind is it would seem that that second group of agents that you described as the peddlers, right? The price sellers.
Right.
That if, in fact, that technology has the capabilities that you just described, that they're at some considerable risk.
They are.
Okay.
They really are. That's where the carriers have invested heavily, hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right.
In new independent insurance agencies, hundreds of these agencies, and these agencies are all are part of that InsurTech world.
Okay.
But they are agencies owned by carriers. And the carriers are looking at them to say, look, this is a price shopping model for people that want to buy insurance over the internet.
Right.
But by either owning the insurance agency or because of that new insurance agency's model, our acquisition cost of clients is going to be materially less than it is for a traditional brick-and-mortar insurance agency that is always selling price. One of the reasons is obviously just cost structure, but another reason is that agencies that just sell price are pretty expensive models to carriers because the hit ratio for new sales is too poor.
Well, and the retention sucks.
And the retention sucks.
Okay.
So
and often, like, this can affect carriers and agencies. It certainly affects agencies. The policy per customer count is often reduced.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So, my argument has for some time been that between the two models, the price seller, the peddler, and the true pro, right?
Mm-hmm.
That strategically choosing the latter, being the true pro, that's the organic growth model that I would choose. I want to give you an opportunity to share a different perspective on that. What do you think?
Well, the professional true counselor can't be replaced yet.
Right, so it's a safer harbor.
Uh huh.
Okay, but two, in my experience, in my own practice, that's generally where I'm seeing the true scaling going on, right? Where there is some genuine depth of relationship or intimacy between the agency and their customer, and so they benefit from increased retention, increased referrals, more policies per customer, and so on and so forth. So they get a higher customer lifetime value.
Right, right, absolutely.
So
the other model's not going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah, okay. Is there a reason for an agency principal now listening to this to choose the peddler model versus the pro model?
Sure, it's a lot easier.
Okay, all right. Easy is it may not always be the best strategic decision, but it's often how decisions are made.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a lot easier, and with the advent of all these networks developing aggregators and clusters and all that, it also makes their survivability a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
You can be that peddler, but within a larger group, and you kind of get a hideout there. Some.
Right.
And you get some of the, for the time being at least, you're also likely to get some benefits from it. So that model is still plenty viable. Whether it can last, it won't last unless the networks can get their acquisition cost of new clients to decrease significantly. And we're talking probably at least a 25% decrease in new client acquisition to carriers.
Okay, that's fairly significant. So let me ask you another question. You know, so there is a channel that specializes in exactly what you talked about, right? The mass marketers, right? The direct marketers advertise and market on price. They have a churn rate that would be completely unacceptable to the independent agency system. They attract a customer that seems to suit that channel quite well. Okay. Do you think that that demographic is as attractive to the independent agency channel as those who truly want not just the best price, but they actually want the best protection, or they want the optimal protection for their assets? In other words, if we're going head to head, channel to channel, the independent agency channel against the direct channel, if it's price peddling, who wins?
If it's pure price peddling, the other channel wins.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. It's a cheaper channel.
Way cheaper channel.
Okay, got it. All right.
The question is that independent agents in many ways have gotten away with the thought process, the advertising that they're bringing more value than just a price to the table, when the reality is they haven't always done that very well.
Oh, the broken promise. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, very much so.
I'm happy to talk about that one, but I'm here to ask you questions, not the other way around. But I agree that, in fact, yes, if the promise of this channel is that you have me, you have an agent, you have a relationship, in many, many ways, we've fallen short on the delivery of that promise.
Totally.
Now, that said, I would say embrace technology.
Embrace technology, and this is where the E&O is going to come in again, is because this new technology that we'll have available to us, but the plaintiff's attorneys are already employing, it's going to make everyone show their cards.
Uh-huh. Got it. I know that you have some thoughts or insights on the role of clusters or networks in the industry, and with, I think, the majority of agencies participating in some kind of a network or another, they're obviously a very, very powerful force. What do you see happening there? What are they doing well, and what kind of benefits are they bringing the agencies? And I guess most importantly, what enhancements can they deliver to the value chain? You know, or what are they working on now that's going to make them better?
Yeah, I just spoke to the new association of these networks. The advice that I gave was that. One is that as a network, just gathering a bunch of people together and going to a carrier and saying, now I have $100 million more of premium altogether, pay me more, that's probably not going to last.
Carriers love that conversation. Okay, so that won't last.
I don't think that's going to last for a lot of different reasons. But from a best practices perspective, the networks have an opportunity, some are doing it already, to build a model in which the acquisition cost to carriers is actually less versus I've got $100 million, now pay me more, where acquisition cost actually increases.
Uh-huh.
So some have already started building it or have built it, and that's really essential at the network level. The networks also have the opportunity with the right leadership to be able to provide, because you can share the vendor costs, they have the ability to really provide some neat services to their members that if the member stays 100% alone, they may not be able to do so.
Above and beyond the traditional services of carrier access and contingency sharing.
Yeah, way beyond that.
Way beyond that.
So you could have better IT, you could have better training.
And in my conversations with a number of these, they are committing to that. They're kind of acting like, well, industry leaders, which they are. Mm-hmm. Right. And so they're making commitments to their network, like carriers are making commitments to their distribution one way or the other.
Right. Some really are and some really aren't.
Yeah. OK. Fair enough. OK. And I'm not going to ask you to name names here, but I think that's interesting insight. And agents, I suppose you would suggest agents, before you join a network, really do some looking around.
Definitely look around and really read the potential contracts carefully. Make it sure it fits you. And make sure that the benefits that are being promised are actually truly being delivered.
Talk to people.
Yeah, talk to different people. I know working with these networks, the differences that I see between what actually gets delivered and what gets promised from one to another is a big scale there.
I know that there's another item of your concern of concern to you, which is the concentration of premium among the carriers, the consolidation of premium. I'm going to read a couple of notes that I took the last time you and I talked. I think you said out of 900 carriers, 11 of them write 50% of premium, 90 of them write 89% of premium, right? Those numbers right? That's mind-boggling to an industry.
That's correct. And again, that's why there's too much cost involved in that. In the bottom 810 carriers.
Oh, okay.
The
bottom 810 out of 90, what do you see happening? Further consolidation? Acquisitions?
Yeah, the 810 have to be consolidated. At least half of them need to be consolidated. There's really, number one is they're not going to be able to afford the technology to keep up.
Okay, right.
They flat can't.
Yeah, because the investments are huge.
The investments are huge. Number two, they are going to get adversely selected against if they do not make this investment in technology. We're already seeing it to some degree.
So what do you think is the therefore for the agency?
So that means that the carriers are going to consolidate, and so the price shopper agent that thinks that they joins a cluster or a network, so they have access to 250 carriers, that's not a very good plan. Because these carriers are going to consolidate one way or another.
Yeah. Okay. So generally, in industry in general, when you see suppliers consolidating, that generally means that more power is shifting in their direction. Mm-hmm. What kind of impact does that have on the everyday life of running an agency?
Well, it's kind of an interesting situation right now. We have a bit of a race going on.
Uh-huh.
One might say a race to the death in some ways. Between
who's in the race to the death? Okay.
Yeah, between whether, say, 10 distributors can get big enough and stay bigger than enough of the companies.
Yeah.
And whether the companies can stay big enough over these 10 distributors of insurance. And they're both in this race to have the most power. The carriers always are going to have more money, by and large. And so, I think that who's going to win ultimately is already kind of predetermined. But in the process, what's going to get lost? And then I would argue, what are the opportunities
Got
that
it.
Are left?
Okay. Talk to us about that.
The opportunities that are left for an independent agent that is professional in the light of a couple things. As costs occur, if you're out there buying agencies at 3 and 4 times, your ability to invest in growth is quite limited, and your ability to grow enough to satisfy the carrier's growth needs, because it's hard to grow $500 million of premium versus $1 million of premium by 10%.
Right, right.
So a really high-quality professional agency that is taking some of their savings, building it towards organic growth has kind, it's going to have a more empty field relative to competitors mm-hmm. than maybe ever before. Everybody else is going to be focused on cutting expenses. And when you're cutting expenses, affording growth is next to impossible.
Got it. Okay. So, so some of what you're saying is music to my ears, because I've always been an advocate and maybe a champion for organic growth and mastering the skills of organic growth. But I think you're saying it, that it's no longer kind of a privileged decision that you can, you know, get around to. It's an imperative. Is that what kind of what you're saying?
Man, I like the way you said that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not really a privilege.
Okay.
It's not really a privilege. It's an imperative. It's imperative that we focus. And I can tell you flat out, and you probably see it all the time, the agencies that are truly committed to a professional angle and organic growth are growing pretty quickly.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, in a moment, I'm going to ask people how people can reach you, find out more about you, again, how they can read your content, which is excellent. Meanwhile, if you could, I'm going to ask you to kind of synthesize this, summarize. So if, less than 50 words, okay. What advice would you give to the listeners who are principals of independent insurance agencies right now?
Number one, run the agency as you would run the most professional business you could ever imagine. Invest in growth. Invest in providing what your clients truly need, and that's professional advice. And I'm pretty positive life is going to be very good for you.
Got it. Those are the ones who are going to scale.
Yep.
Okay. Love it. Chris, this has been I really appreciate you sharing your insights and observations and the fruits of your research. If people want to find out more about you, learn what you're up to, and get your content, how can they do that?
Best place to reach me is probably by email, and that's just chris@buran-associates.com.
Okay, and I'm going to spell that. It's chris@Burand, BURAND-associates.com.
Correct.
I got that right? Alrighty, Chris, let's do this again. This has been a terrific conversation. I really, really appreciate you sharing your wisdom.
Well, you're welcome. I'm glad you liked it.
Thank you for listening to the Connected Insurance Podcast. If you found this episode informative, please share it with your peers and colleagues. Explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers by visiting agencyrevolution.com and clicking media. Subscribe and get updates delivered right to your inbox. New episodes every Wednesday.